I was 7 or 8 years old when I had one of those aha moments regarding sexual differences between boys and girls. And I decided to share that newfound insight with my little sister, with Frankie. But before telling her, I insisted that she not tell anyone else, especially a parent or grandparent, the subject being taboo in those days among those of us in the early elementary grades. I can still see Frankie and me huddled together on the floor of my grandparents' sleeping porch as she promised she would not tell. And I can still see her jumping up within moments of my sharing and running off to tell our grandmother. Although my grandmother was not at all shocked by that news, nor was she upset, I was. I had been betrayed. A promise made had been broken. No matter how incidental, no matter how much I may look back and laugh at my naivete, the consequence was that never again would I naively trust my sister as I had before that day. That's one of the truths associated with any wrong done, no matter how great or small. Forgiving does not mean we forget, nor does it mean things will ever be the same again as they were before a transgression. There can be, however, a mending of relationship. There can, paradoxically, be a deepening of intimacy, a deepening of compassion for another. I was 9 years old the day that my best friend, Patty, threatened to hit me as we walked home together after school. So afraid was I of her threat that as soon as it was voiced, I began running away from her. When I reached the front door of our house, I raced in, slammed the door shut, and locked it just as Patty reached the top step of the porch. I can still see her pounding on the glass door and yelling at me as I, exhausted, hurried across the living room, my goal to reach the back door and lock it before Patty got there. Just as I reached the door into the kitchen, my mother entered through the back door. Patty turned quietly and walked away. While I have absolutely no recollection of what Patty and I were fighting about, we'd probably made up by the time we went to bed that night, I do recall tears of pain and anger as I told Mom what had happened. Her response offered one of the most important lessons of my life, not one simply associated with letting go, with forgiveness, but a quality of the heart of empathy and of compassion. In the context of whatever was our conflict, Mom suggested that Patty may have been acting out of a deep hurt that had nothing to do with me, a hurt that Patty herself might not be conscious of, a hurt so deep that it sometimes might cause her to act out of anger rather than to feel a great sadness within. Patty, you see, had been adopted 5 years before by our neighbors, her aunt and uncle, after her parents had been killed in a car accident. whether a hurt is inflicted upon us by another, or our own hurtful behavior is aimed toward another, often there has been a deep underlying wound through which another has acted toward us, through which we interpret the harmful act of another, or from which we lash out. If we can understand that, perhaps it becomes easier to forgive or to ask for forgiveness. Empathy and compassion may be born of deep wounds. And so may our deepest, closest relationships be deepened when we risk sharing the source of pain that may lead us to act out. From our childhood experiences, our experiences in family and friendship, and those I've just shared admittedly are gentle in comparison with some, from wounds that occur throughout our lifetime, from abuse, physical and emotional, neglect, betrayals, the breaking of vows, the deaths of those we love. Wounds inflicted throughout our lives, often by those to whom we are closest. From these, we can learn so much about forgiving and being forgiven. I must admit, as I recalled my sister's childish betrayal, I found myself asking, had I ever really forgiven her? I thought so, but wondered, what had that been like? There was never a particular moment, no apology expressed, no dramatic moment of reconciliation, no time in our lives when I said or thought, I forgive you. No time when she asked me to forgive her. And so it is so often with forgiveness. Time simply passes. Family and friends come together to celebrate birthdays and holidays and rites of passage. Babies are born and elders die. Then one day we just may wake up and realize there has been a change. We are no longer carrying the weight of an old wound. For some, the injuries may have been so harmful that the notion of forgiving is inconceivable. Wayne Muller, a minister, a writer, and therapist, argues, however, that forgiving in such circumstances is still important. What we are forgiving, he writes, is not the act, not the violence or the neglect, the incest, the divorce, the cruelty or the abuse. We are forgiving the actors, the people who could not manage to honor and cherish their own children, their own spouse, or their own lives in a loving and gentle way. We are forgiving their suffering, their confusion, their unskillfulness, their desperation, and their humanity. We step toward freedom. End quote. There is a deep emotional cost associated with not forgiving. The point was made clear one afternoon when I was in seminary. We had been asked the question, what is not forgiving? Within a very short time, 8 or 10 of us had generated a long list that included words such as angry, resentful, controlling, blaming, vengeful, bitter, judgmental, condemning, self-righteous, sad, hateful, silent, withdrawn, disconnected, empty. Words, feelings that twist our guts, feelings that can lead to despair, ways of being that prevent us from wholeness and happiness. To be not forgiving reveals that the one who suffers most may well be the injured one, hurt first by another's cruelty, meanness, or unkindness. But then there is a deeper hurt. The deeper hurt is the harm done to oneself by holding on to the anger, the pain, the resentment. And so we need not only to forgive others, but to forgive ourselves. Jack Kornfeld, a Buddhist who has written extensively on spiritual healing, confirms the importance of forgiveness as one of the great gifts of the spiritual life, an act of the heart, and a valuable release from our sorrows of the past. Rarely achievable in a fairy tale way, according to one rabbi, another asserts forgiveness is a byproduct of an ongoing healing process. A byproduct of an ongoing healing process grounded in reflection, acknowledgement of the wrong, and a demonstrable change in behavior. Glib apologies do not easily open doors to forgiveness. Many years ago, I did organizing with a community action agency in Southern Illinois. The people to whom we reached out were urban blacks and rural whites. One day, my colleague, Mac, an African American, invited me to join him for lunch at a little cafe in the black community. We had just settled into a booth when two men sat in the booth adjacent to ours. The one with whom I was back to back leaned around and began talking to Mac. Then he saw me. "What you doing in here, white girl?" Not waiting for an answer, he said, "You get out of here, whitey." Mac and I looked at each other, got up, and left. My heart raced as we walked toward the door, and as I thought, this is what happens to black people all the time. And this is the first time it's ever happened to me. I need to pay attention to how this feels. 2 years later, I was working in the Office for Community Relations at the university. It was my last day there, and I ran into Mac in the hallway. We stopped to talk and to say goodbye. A young man came up behind me, greeted Mac, then looked at me and said cordially as he offered his hand, "I don't think we've met." Mac looked at him, and then me, and then with a sardonic smile, nodded. "Oh, yes, you have." Nothing more needed to be said. We three knew. "I'm so glad to see you again," said Mac's friend, whose name I never learned. "That day was one of the worst in my life. I'd lost my job that morning, and the night before my girlfriend broke up with me. You were there, and I took it out on you." So often,
The hurts we inflict upon others are related to deep wounds within. How sad it is that there are those who hold on to an unkind word spoken at a family dinner, in a restaurant, or cocktail party, or perhaps in a church board meeting. How often might we offend someone and have not a clue what we said or what we did? So often, writes one rabbi, we stand on ceremony with loved ones and friends, waiting for them to apologize first, to humble themselves so that we can feel bigger. And then the resentments only congeal, and weeks, months, years go by without speaking, even after the cause of the fight may be forgotten and irrelevant. Every so often, he adds, it is a good exercise to ask oneself, if one of us died before we made up, would I really want to have held that grudge, to have not spoken, to have it all end without any attempt at reconciliation? And so, then, what is forgiving? Robin Kasargian has summarized well the wisdom of many who have written about forgiveness. Forgiveness involves a commitment to experience each moment uncluttered by past perceptions, to accept responsibility for our perceptions, to recognize that our perceptions are not necessarily objective facts. With the practice of forgiveness, we open the way for a fading away of the perceptions that cloud our ability to love. Forgiveness is a decision to see beyond the limits of another, beyond fears, idiosyncrasies, neuroses, and mistakes, to see a pure essence unconditioned by personal history, always, always worthy of love and respect. Forgiveness is a process. Forgiveness is a way of life that gradually transforms us from being victims of our circumstances to being loving co-creators of our reality. Forgiveness is to let go, to release, and to cease harboring the past, and may be experienced as a feeling of joyfulness, peacefulness, love, and open-heartedness, ease, expansiveness, confidence, freedom, lightness, and a sense of rightness. End quote. I am touched deeply by the intentions of the High Holy Days, profound intentions learned thousands of years ago, I suspect, by human beings seeking to live together in community. There is good reason that our Jewish ancestors determined that every year there would be a time devoted to contemplation, to a time for clearing the heart. They understood that we humans need to engage again and again in times of introspection. They understood that repentance and forgiveness are spiritual tools at the heart of being in community, in blessed, beloved community. They understood that forgiving does not excuse wrongs or deny that they have happened, nor does it mean that one need to or ever will forget. They understood that forgiveness was not a one-time thing, that it is a practice in which we fallible mortals must engage over and over and over again. So may it be. It's a 7-minute meditation, I think. Should I go? one of the great lessons that I, as a Unitarian Universalist, take from my understanding of the Jewish High Holy Days is that we are responsible for our own atonement, that sense of becoming at one with ourselves, with others, and with the universe. In the spirit of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, I offer a Buddhist forgiveness meditation, which I introduce with some abbreviated comments from Sharon Salzberg. The intention of this meditation is not to force anything or to pretend to anything or to forget about ourselves in utter deference to the needs of others. It does not mean condoning a harmful action or denying injustice or suffering. It is a type of dying in which we must be able to say, I am not that person anymore, and you are not that person anymore. It is an inner relinquishment of guilt or resentment that may take an outward form. We may seek to make amends, demand justice, resolve to be treated better, or simply leave a situation behind. Forgiveness is a process. That means that when we join in this morning's meditation, if you will allow yourself to go with it, some conflicted emotions may arise. Shame, anger, a sense of betrayal, confusion, or doubt. Let your feelings arise without judgment. Recognize them, and then gently return your attention to the forgiveness reflection. It's done in three parts. We will ask forgiveness from those we have harmed, offer forgiveness to those who have harmed us, and offer forgiveness to ourselves. I join you then, invite you to sit comfortably. If you're comfortable with it, close your eyes. Take a couple of deep breaths. First, we seek forgiveness from those we may have hurt. Let the following words become a silent recitation. If I have hurt or harmed anyone, knowingly or unknowingly, I ask their forgiveness. If I have hurt or harmed anyone, knowingly or unknowingly, I ask their forgiveness. If different people, images, or scenarios come up, release the burden of guilt and ask for forgiveness. I ask your forgiveness. Next, we offer forgiveness to those who have harmed us. Don't worry if there's not a great rush of loving feeling. Simply honor the force of intention. Let the following words become a silent recitation. If anyone has hurt or harmed me, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive them. If anyone has hurt or harmed me, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive them. And as those thoughts and images arise, offer forgiveness. I forgive you. Finally, we turn our attention to forgiveness of ourselves. Consider ways you have harmed yourself, or not loved yourself, or not lived up to your own expectations. This is the time to let go of unkindness toward yourself. You may wish to include here any ability to forgive others that you became aware of. That's not a reason to be unkind to yourself. Speak silently this recitation. For all of the ways I have hurt or harmed myself, knowingly or unknowingly, I offer forgiveness. For all of the ways I have hurt or harmed myself, knowingly or unknowingly, I offer forgiveness. So may it be.